This is your weekly checkup with Howard Feldman and Dr. Anton Myberg, where medical innovation meets human understanding.
It's 6 minutes past the hour of six. A very good evening to you. Normally, your immune system is your body's security team. It identifies threats, attacks viruses, destroys bacteria, and protects you from disease. But what happens when that security system becomes confused? What happens when your body stops distinguishing between enemy and self? Tonight, on the Weekly Checkup, we're talking about autoimmune diseases, conditions where the body mistakenly attacks its own organs, joints, skin, thyroid, nerves, and even blood vessels. Why are autoimmune diseases increasing? Why are women disproportionately affected? Can stress trigger them? And why do so many sufferers hear that your tests are normal long before they get answers? Joining me, as always, is Dr. Anton Myberg. A very good evening.
Good evening. It feels like a long time since we've done a live show.
Yeah, no, we've been pre-recording. So it is great because that means people can ask us questions and we can endeavor to answer them. 061-895-1019. Before we kick off on this whole autoimmune journey, can I just get a... and I'm hesitant because I don't want to give myself PTSD and go back to COVID podcast, but can you give us a very brief, quick update on Hunter virus before we get into this stuff?
So I'm not going to start it today. There are so many cases.
Oh,
that brings back too many bad memories.
Oh, okay,
so
about that.
I think everyone knows what Hunter virus is now.
It's Hunter, not Hunter.
Yeah. Well, Hunter's H-U-N-T-R, so I mean, I would say
okay,
Hunter,
fine.
You know?
Let's go.
Potato, potato.
Okay, cool. Happy.
So we know that it's can be a fatal respiratory disease or a renal disease. It's transmitted through droppings or urine or saliva from infected rodents. And as of today, there are 7 laboratory-confirmed cases that have been identified amongst passengers and crew. There have been 3 fatalities, and the ship itself has been repatriated with its crew mainly to Spain, mm-hmm. all through private medical flights back home. The specific strain we're dealing with here is called the Andes virus, which is a rare strain from South America. And unlike most of the Hunter viruses, this strain is capable of human-to-human transmission through very close, prolonged contact. It's definitely not a pandemic. Let me repeat that again. This is not a pandemic. This is not another COVID-19. It does not spread easily through the air. It requires intimate or very close contact with an infected person or their fluids. Being the incubation period can take about 1 to 8 weeks to appear, and they will be monitoring the 97 contacts that they've picked up for the next 8 weeks. So for the next 42 days, they'll be monitoring them. The symptoms at the beginning mimic those of flu, fever, fatigue, muscle aches. And it can lead to what we call the Hunter pulmonary virus, pulmonary syndrome, causing rapid respiratory failure, as well as other types of failure where you get a hemorrhagic renal failure, which is found in the European types of patients. There's no specific treatment. There's no specific cure. It's all supportive. The only thing to do is stay away from rodents. Primary risk of your Hunter virus comes from rodents. Avoid contacts with their droppings, the urine, their saliva. Don't sweep or vacuum any sort of droppings around that area.
Oh, there's no
and if
danger.
There's any holes in your home, to just prevent any rodent entry. Don't allow human
okay.
mouse in through there.
So really what you're saying is no sweeping, no dusting, and that's according to a doctor.
Yeah.
Right, I got it. Okay, we're going to take a quick break before we even get going. When we come back, we are going to ask the question, what exactly is an autoimmune disease?
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Myberg. This evening, we are talking about autoimmune disease. We'd love your questions, 061-895-1019. Starting at the very beginning, what exactly is an autoimmune disease?
So this is a condition where your immune system in your body will mistakenly attack your body's own healthy cells, tissues, or organs. What normally happens in our immune systems is they're built like a security system. So they protect you from foreign invaders like bacteria and viruses. And when you get into this autoimmune type of state, your body is not able to distinguish itself from the non-self. In other words, it sends out your protectors, your white blood cells and your proteins, and these are called autoantibodies, which then land up damaging healthy cells and healthy tissues. So with regards to an autoimmune disease, it can be a chronic condition. It's got a chronic nature because it's a lifelong condition and needs to be managed. And there's, at this point in our trajectory, there's no actual known cure for any of the autoimmune diseases. There are treatments, but no cure.
Are there known causes?
There are known hypothetical causes, and there are things that do cause flares to happen, but we don't know exactly. I mean, the prevalence, there's over 100 different types of autoimmune diseases. Even in the USA, over 50 million people are affected. I mean, if you watch House medical program, I mean,
no,
every single person has got lupus.
Oh, autoimmune.
Lupus is one of the autoimmunes, which I'd like to discuss a bit later.
Right.
The symptoms often come and go in cycles, and those are called flare-ups. So a flare-up is a period when the symptoms actually worsen, and then there's something called remission, and that's when the symptoms disappear and they get better for a while.
I find this whole conversation of autoimmune very, very confusing. And I can really understand when we speak about cancer, stroke, you know, diabetes. I can actually understand the mechanism of what it is.
Okay, you mentioned diabetes. You know, type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease.
Really?
So that's what people don't understand. Well, everyone just thinks of autoimmune disease as lupus or psoriasis or something like that. But an autoimmune disease can target specific organs. Or it can be systemic, like something like lupus, where it affects the whole body. So type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease because your immune system attacks your insulin-producing cells in your pancreas. Rheumatoid arthritis, system targets the lining of your joints. Multiple sclerosis, but you didn't know that was an autoimmune disease.
No, I didn't.
That attacks the protective covering of nerves in the brain and the spinal cord. Lupus, which everyone knows, that's a systemic disease. In other words, it attacks multiple organs in the body. Psoriasis, you get overactive immune cells that cause your skin cells to reproduce too quickly, and then you get those scaly plaques that form. And albeit that we don't really know the true etiology of it, researchers believe it is a combination of factors, whether it's related to your genetics.
Mm-hmm.
So you may actually inherit one of these predispositions from your parents. It could be an environmental trigger, like an infection, a virus or bacteria, even exposed to certain chemicals.
So you could not have this autoimmune disease and something triggers
some
it.
Trigger
because that's
can
what
bring
one of
on.
My questions I was going to ask you is how does it suddenly,
but
a person
so
with type 1 diabetes.
Genetically prone. So,
right.
So someone who's genetically prone can have it turned on, okay,
right,
through one of these things. And then in women, the high levels of female hormones can play a role in why women are more affected.
I really have a hard time.
And also the problem is diagnosing, it's also going to be very difficult because it's not just based on a blood test. It's based on a blood test plus other things to look for. And treatment, in essence, slows the immune system, relieves symptoms, and replaces missing substances. So it's a very complicated type of disease that has got multiple different type of diseases involved in it and all act in different ways.
I would imagine ones like diabetes type 1 is obviously easier to diagnose because there's a very clear test for it.
And as I say, most people don't even know that type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease.
I've now learned that. But you know, what about the others? You're saying it is much more difficult to...
lupus is far more difficult.
Is it a process or do you not have this autoimmune on Monday, but by Tuesday you do?
So you see, because it's a slow developing disease, for things like lupus, it's a process. But if you've got psoriasis and you've got plaques all over your skin and your flexures, like, you know, on your elbows and your knees and your pads, then you can really pick it up. It's not so hard to ascertain that that's psoriasis. You know, multiple sclerosis is not something that you just pick up overnight.
Right.
So there's certain things that you can pick up and certain that you can't. There's certain interval changes in the diagnosis and the development of the disease.
So multiple sclerosis, if somebody has a seizure, would that be?
So multiple sclerosis is not definitely a seizure related. It's more of a different, because it's a demyelination. In other words, the covering of the nerve sheath is removed, and that causes abnormalities.
Right. Okay. And are they becoming more common, or are we identifying them more, or both?
So I think they are, I think both of those, actually. I think they're both playing a part, because if we look worldwide, there's about an increase in the prevalence of about 3 to 10% in the development of autoimmune diseases. There's a rising incidence.
Mm-hmm.
There's new cases of autoimmune disease that is being diagnosed every day. So there's also increasing biomarkers, tests that we can do to try and help us understand, whereas 25 years ago, we didn't have these tests. There's a lot more young adults being affected than were. Mm. So there's, we've seen a notable rise in diagnosis of teenagers and young adults with marked autoimmunity. Okay, and the reasons for the increase, once again, we've said genetics play a major role in this, but it's largely attributed to environmental and lifestyle factors. So diet and lifestyle, the Western diets, high in processed foods, we've said that many times with a lot of things, along with increased stress levels, your environmental factors. And there's something called your hygiene hypothesis, which I'm sure you've heard of. And if when I mention it, you'll understand because you have heard of it. Due to the fact that we've got improved sanitation and cleaning and clean environments, this reduces one's early exposure to germs. So this leads our immune systems to be less trained to fight against pathogens and germs and landing up attacking healthy cells.
Yes.
And of course, then we've got better detection.
Right. I would imagine, you know, somebody's got fatigue, a bit of pain, a bit of inflammation, brain fog. I mean, it sounds like a normal day in everybody's life. How then do you, and they go to their GP, for example, or you're even a specialist, like what would make them go on a journey of trying to figure out that if it's maybe something more than that?
So once again, I think one of the problems with patients is that patients start becoming accustomed to the symptoms. They start getting used to it and think, well, this, I'm just tired, so that's why I'm feeling this is
that
a problem.
Last week.
So this fatigue that I've got, or the fact that I can't get off the bed, or I can't move, it's okay because I'm stressed. I've got children. I've got
I'm getting older
parents I'm looking after. I've got young kids I'm looking after. I've got to go to the shopping. What are this? These things are all okay. But once something starts to become debilitating or changes your general focus in life, that you can't do things you used to do, or you're not able to reach certain challenges that should be normal for you, then you've got to start thinking something's wrong. And then when you go to your doctor, they start looking for different things. And once again, something like lupus, it takes a long time to diagnose because the symptoms mimic other diseases, so it's very hard to diagnose that type of thing. With a disease like rheumatoid arthritis, where you get actual joint abnormalities and changes in your different organs in the body, it's much easier to pick up.
It is 18:19. It is time for us to take a very, very quick break. If you have questions on autoimmune diseases, 061-895-1019. Are you suffering? Do you suffer from an autoimmune disease? Have you been diagnosed? Was it difficult to get diagnosed? And how are you coping with it? I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Meiberg.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Meiberg. We are talking about autoimmune diseases. And just important, like, just for me to understand, what is the immune system meant to do normally?
So we have discussed this before and other things about immunity. And remember, we've said that the immune system is your body's internal security and repair system. So its primary job is to distinguish between your own healthy cells and everything else. And then it's supposed to neutralize all the unhealthy and all the things that don't belong there that can cause harm. So its standard operation is to defend against invaders, which could be your pathogens, your viruses, your bacteria. It's got to do surveillance of internal changes. In other words, it patrols for abnormal cells, looking for cancerous cells, and tries to eliminate them before they become tumors. It's involved in healing and repair, which coordinates clearing away of dead tissue and repairing damaged cells. And then, more importantly, it's got what we call a learning and memory button. So that, after defeating a specific germ once, it keeps a record. We call them memory cells. So it can recognize and destroy the same threat much faster if it ever returns. And there's something called neutralizing toxins, where it identifies and then inactivates the harmful substances from the environment, like other toxins or poisons come about. And normally it works by something called an innate immunity, which is your general immunity. And that's your first line of defense, your skin barrier or your fast-acting, what we call scavenger cells, macrophages. And those are what attack everything that comes in that's sort of suspicious. And then you get your adaptive immunity, and that's your specialist part of your immunity. And that's a more target system. That's used something called B cells and T cells, which we hear a lot about, which make the antibodies. And that essentially learns how to be a specific fingerprint of an invader and provides long-term protection. So when the system's working properly, it triggers an inflammation, which you get that redness on your skin or warmth or swelling, which is a normal response, okay? But it's a temporary response. And that brings more white cells, more scavenger cells, more macrophages to the trouble spot, shuts it down, cordons off, and gets it out of there, which is very important in your treatment of all of these things.
Okay, let's start talking about, let's start going through diseases that I think many of us have heard of but really don't understand. Let's start with rheumatoid arthritis. What is the difference between rheumatoid arthritis and arthritis?
Okay, so once again, rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease because in this disease, your immune system attacks your joint linings. It's called the synovium, okay?
Right.
Whereas an ordinary arthritis, and this is where people get very confused, that's called an osteoarthritis. That's a degenerative wear and tear type of disease.
Ah, okay.
So your rheumatoid arthritis, you get what we call a very symmetrical inflammatory response, and you get systemic involvement, in other words, fatigue and fever. Whereas with osteoarthritis, you get that mechanical localized stiffness that worsens with activity and develops over time. And the causes are very different. With regards to rheumatoid arthritis, we've said it's an autoimmune disease that attacks your joint lining, which causes inflammation, bone erosion. With osteoarthritis, it's mechanical wear and tear, breaks down your cartilage and the protective tissue that covers your bone ends. Symptoms are very different. With rheumatoid arthritis, you get morning stiffness, which normally lasts for about 30 minutes to hour, hour and a half, but it often improves with activity. And the symptoms can be systemic. They can involve fatigue and fever. Whereas with osteoarthritis, the stiffness usually starts off in the morning for about half an hour. And then unless you get up and move around, it doesn't get better. So with increased activity and movement, it starts getting better. And the joint pattern is different. It's symmetrical for rheumatoid. It's usually on weight-bearing joints for osteoarthritis. And rheumatoid
because
can
that's much more mechanical,
yeah,
really,
well, like
if you think
of a mechanic. You know, someone who's working with his hands all day, or an artisan, someone who's actually, or someone even someone who's knitting or sewing and working with their hands
the
whole
day.
Well,
I get it from typing WhatsApps on my
phone. So you're going to get thumb osteoarthritis.
Yeah, I think I've already got it. We'll talk about that afterwards.
Okay.
Google that.
And then the treatment's obviously very different because with rheumatoid arthritis, here you're aiming to suppress your immune system because you want to prevent further damage. And we use what we call disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs. Whereas osteoarthritis, it's more of a symptomatic treatment. You focus on pain management, on weight loss because of the weight bearing, and physical therapy to help with the movement.
What about ages?
So rheumatoid arthritis can affect any age. You do get conditions such as juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, okay, which can affect younger people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In fact, I was speaking to a patient today. It was very interesting. And they told me that they were diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis at the age of 15. And we're talking about 45 years ago. And the only treatment at that time was aspirin. So this patient was told to stay in bed for 6 weeks.
Mm.
He was given aspirin. And coincidentally, he's got a lot of gastric issues at the moment, I'm sure. But I'm saying that's how things have changed. So it can affect any age.
Right. Unsigned says, my late husband had MS. He led a full working life using a walking stick or a wheelchair. The only thing was he could fall asleep on a washing line. I loved him. So obviously
sounds a bit like narcolepsy.
Yeah, well, it's obviously that level of exhaustion that you spoke about earlier. Okay, and today, treatment for rheumatoid?
So the treatment for rheumatoid involves disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs. And there's a lot of treatments we know, such as things like methotrexate, which is a cancer drug.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things called chloroquine, which is used very much, Arava, which is also used. A lot of anti-inflammatories are used. And being physicians, we don't love anti-inflammatories, but when you're in that amount of pain,
right,
you've got to
and
balance the pain.
And is that the same with a flare-up and then it kind of settles?
So a lot of times in a flare-up, you use corticosteroids.
Oh,
and you use high dose of corticosteroids. Mm. And remember, your joints, they get exposed with this rheumatoid arthritis. They become the target because it's such a thin lining that produces fluid that lubricates your joints.
Mm.
It's the first point of attack for the immune system. And even a past infection, like we said, you can get proteins that very look similar to the germs, and your immune system remembers the invader and then continues attacking your joints afterwards, causing your rheumatoid to flare up. So one of the interesting things which we find in athletes is repeated physical stress or injury to a joint, like a runner's heel, can expose tissue that normally isn't in contact with blood cells. And then the immune system can sometimes actually see this tissue as a wound and launches an abnormal response. So, you know, your body is very clever, but it sometimes reacts in a way that it's conditioned to.
Let's talk about the Dr. House favorite, lupus. I've heard it being called the great imitator. What does that actually mean?
So I think before we discuss why it's imitator, we actually got to discuss what it is, you know?
Fair question.
I mean, most people...
Fine. Why don't you sit here and then you ask yourself
because
the question.
What is lupus?
Well, I think, and before we actually... it's actually known as the great imitator.
Okay, very, very good. I like the way you think, okay? So lupus is one of your systemic autoimmune diseases, okay? It's one of the most famous ones because of medical dramas where it's always brought up and it's always the first cause. And why is it that? Because, as you say, it's a great imitator. So it can imitate any type of disease, and I'll explain to that why. It can cause your immune system, as we say, with all these autoimmune diseases, to attack healthy tissue surrounding the body. And rather than just one specific area, it goes throughout the body, okay? So unlike diseases like thyroid disease, where it just affects the thyroid, like in Hashimoto's, which we can also discuss, you get a circulation through the bloodstream, which causes damage wherever it goes. So you get widespread inflammation, where you get chronic inflammation targeting your joints, your skin, your blood vessels, and then you get what we call immune complexes, and this is very pertinent to lupus, okay? The immune system creates these complexes which lodge in the tissue, and these trigger an immune response that damages the surrounding tissues. And there's multiple different targets and mechanisms. So lupus attacks different systems by attacking the connective tissue and cells, or by damaging the blood supply, by damaging the blood vessels that supply oxygen to these organs. So very common, you hear something say they've got a lupus nephritis, they can go into kidney failure, because you get kidney damage because the kidney acts as a filter. Right. So these immune complexes are trapped and cause inflammation in the kidneys. The skin and the joint, the most common manifestation on the skin is what we call a butterfly rash, okay? And that's very interesting because one of the reasons why it's called lupus is lupus in Latin is a wolf. And people used to see these patients with these butterfly rashes on their face, and they used to think they were attacked by a wolf because they had this rash on their face. It looked like a wolf mark.
That's unbelievable.
So it's very interesting.
That's where it got its name from. Why do I remember reading that
Romulus and Remus and the wolf?
That frequent miscarriages is a symptom.
So it is, because there's a lot of different conditions that go together with an antiphospholipid syndrome and thrombotic conditions, in other words, where your body clots, related to the lupus. So it can affect your heart and lungs. It affects inflammation, causes pleural fluid. Fluid in the lungs can cause a pericarditis, fluid around the heart. It can affect your neurological system, causing seizures, cognitive dysfunction, brain fog, headaches, seizures. So it's a mixed trigger of a disease.
Yeah, and I guess if you focus on one of the symptoms versus all of the symptoms, you can land up going down a very specific route, but actually
you can go down a rabbit hole. I mean,
but not identifying it.
You know, you should have asked me why is it called the great mimicker, because that would have been a great question.
Mm, okay? Really, I wish I had thought of that question.
This is maybe it's got your brain fog. So lupus can take a number of years to be diagnosed because it does mimic single diseases, and there's no one single diagnostic test. And that's where many people make a mistake. Just because there's a blood test called the ANA, okay, anti-neutrophil antibodies, which is highly suggestive of lupus but doesn't definitively mean you have got lupus. So people just look at the blood test, but they don't look at the clinical picture. And a lot of time, if you've got other infections, it can cause a false raise in this ANA level and get one to think that they might have lupus. But it mimics other diseases, the extreme fatigue, the joint pain, the skin rashes. They're so nonspecific for other diseases that it can lead to misdiagnosis. And, of course, you get fluctuating symptoms. You get the flares. You get the remission. It's complex. It can affect any organ system, and it develops slowly. It's a very gradual onset. You don't just wake up one morning with a butterfly rash or with kidney failure or with damage to your heart or with fluid in your lungs. And the problem with it is patients generally land up consulting multiple specialists over a number of years.
I would imagine.
With one symptom here, one symptom there. and you've got to go to a holistic doctor or a rheumatologist. I mean, the rheumatologists are the most qualified to treat this because of the joint involvement and because of the treatment related to
it. But you have got to be advised to go there because right. It's a very difficult for a layperson.
Agreed.
It's a very, very difficult thing. Quite a few messages. Bianca says, I type on my smartphone with my index finger with either hand. I can't do it with my thumb anymore. Yeah, you see, coming to my defense. And Ansan says, what about Crohn's? Dr. Anton will know why I'm asking. The disease has been passed down for a generation.
Especially in the Ashkenazi Jews, we've been
really?
Before. And the non-Caucasian population in America, very prone.
Okay, that is interesting. Ansan says antiphospholipid syndrome isn't necessarily lupus, ?
It's definitely not lupus,
right.
But there is a relationship between antiphospholipid syndrome and your clotting factors and abnormalities together with these things. So when you're testing for something for lupus, you look for antiphospholipid syndrome, you look at different types of bloods for different clotting abnormalities.
Okay, I've no idea what you just said, but okay, that's fine, as long as it answers Ansan.
Mimica, the great Mimica.
It was honestly...
Antiphospholipid syndrome is the one that majorly causes miscarriages.
Oh, okay. Well, you should have just said that, and then I would have known. Okay, I'm just looking if you've answered all of my questions on lupus. I think you actually have. And then I want to go on to thyroid disease, Hashimoto's or Graves' disease. Can we start off with why it's called that?
So thyroids are also autoimmune diseases. Okay? And you get what we call either Hashimoto's, thyroiditis, and Graves' disease. My thought process would be was Dr. Hashimoto diagnosed the thyroiditis and Dr. Grave diagnosed the Graves' disease.
That's such a boring answer.
No, I would say so.
If
they were Roman or
I was doing the whole Grave.
Greek, you know? Grave diagnosis.
And who wants to go to a doctor called Dr. Grave?
Yeah, well, we can go down that line.
Right. Yeah,
so once again, these are very much more organ-specific autoimmune diseases. Okay? And even though we hear a lot about them, they only affect 5% of our general population. But there's an interplay of genetic as well as environmental susceptibility. And if you've got a strong family history, although it's not definitively inherited, you have a higher chance of developing these type of things. So iodine is a big play here because iodine is necessary for thyroid function. But a deficiency or an excess of iodine is dangerous. So in westernized countries like ours, you've got iodine-fortified food. So high iodine is a major trigger for triggering autoimmune changes. And I don't know if you remember years ago in your time when you were born, there was things like salt without iodine. And then they only started introducing it in those times.
No, there actually wasn't. No, I wasn't born before the Industrial Revolution.
These are reasons why iodine was introduced in things like salt and like to actually help with thyroid-related issues. Okay, but other infections like hepatitis C or Epstein-Barr virus, these can also be associated with a higher risk of developing thyroiditis, which is inflammation of your thyroid.
Wait, but Epstein-Barr,
It's not a cause, but it's related to an inflammation in the thyroid.
I'm saying it's not an autoimmune.
No, those are just the viruses.
Can trigger it.
Tobacco smoke is actually more of a risk factor for you developing Graves' disease, which is related to hyperthyroidism, when there's a high intake of thyroid hormones in the body and it causes different problems, okay? And your thyroid is actually a very vulnerable type of thing because it's got a unique structure. Your thyroid relies on specialized proteins that act as antigens and that works with your immune system. So I think if you understand, we actually got to take it one step back and try and understand what actually is the thyroid gland. And the thyroid gland is your regulator of your basal metabolic rate, of your metabolism.
Right.
So that helps you process converting food and nutrients into energy, for example, because it controls how every cell in your body uses energy. So even small imbalances can impact you. So, for instance, someone who's got low energy, and we look at the thyroid as a gas pedal on your body system, essentially, if you're not putting the gas on. So if you've got low energy in a condition called hypothyroidism, where the thyroid is underactive, your metabolism will slow down. So this leads to that feeling of chronic fatigue, of that mental brain fog.
So that mimics depression.
Or that mimics depression and it mimics lupus, okay? High energy, on the opposite, when you're at hyperthyroidism, This is when your thyroid revs up your metabolism. So it can make you initially feel very energetic and revved up, but then it can turn into anxiety, restlessness, insomnia, and feeling of depletion and exhaustion. And it's very important because the thyroid has a major role on the impact of weight. So as we said,
it influences... I was hoping my whole life that I had an underactive thyroid. It turned out I didn't. I was just eating too much.
So it's the amount of energy your body burns at rest is determined by your thyroid. So if you've got weight gain in, as you said, hypothyroidism, a low basal metabolic rate means you burn fewer calories. So then you lead to the weight gain. Okay. Right.
But if I'm not clear, yeah. I would imagine our listeners aren't either. Is hyper and hypothyroidism?
That's not autoimmune.
Okay, I was just going to say. So that's what I want.
It's more of a explain what the thyroid does.
Because okay, fine.
When you want to understand what autoimmune disease is, you've got to understand what the organism is attacking.
Got it. I understand.
So, for instance, as we said, rheumatoid arthritis attacks the synovium, which is the fluid lining around the joints. So here, you're attacking the thyroid. And when it attacks the thyroid, why is it such a problem? Well, this is what the thyroid
it's
does.
It's because it can cause either hyper or hypothyroidism.
And then I think you brought up something very important. You were discussing depression, you know? So the thyroid problems can mimic depression. It's also one of your great mimickers.
Yes.
Because an underactive thyroid, people are sad, tired, fatigued, and that's more with depression. With an overactive one, it's more the burnout symptoms, and brain fog can come with both of them. And, you know, the thyroid imbalances your metabolism, your energy levels, your brain function. So these can cause physical symptoms actually to coexist with mental ones.
Okay, and before we go to an ad break, message from Dr. Anton, the other Dr. Anton, academic, not medical, he specifies, with a surname sounding like lupus, which is lopus. My immune system hopefully is doing a good job off the removal of a molar tooth this morning. Ugh. That is awful, and I hope it wasn't too painful, and I hope you have a very speedy recovery. We'll be back with the weekly checkup just after this.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It is 6:40. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Myberg. We are talking about autoimmune diseases. I want to actually, Anton, with your permission, I want to go through just almost like one sentence on each of these: psoriasis, Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, multiple sclerosis, and celiac disease.
So based the rest of the autoimmune diseases.
Yes, well, we have to cover them, you know. At least, I'm glad you recognized them, because otherwise I would have panicked. Right, so psoriasis.
Okay, so psoriasis is an autoimmune disease that is not contagious. It causes your skin cells to build up rapidly where you get these thick, scaly patches. It's an inflammatory condition, and the patches are very typically red or pink with these silvery scales on, mainly affecting your elbows, knees, scalp, and lower back.
Okay. The next one, I got distracted by a message. Crohn's disease.
So Crohn's disease is a long-term inflammatory bowel disease that causes inflammation and irritation anywhere along your digestive tract, from the mouth to the anus, most commonly affecting your small ileum, where you get vitamin B12 deficiencies, chronic diarrhea, abdominal pain, cramping, weight loss, fever, fatigue. These are the most common symptoms.
And you say that's common in Ashkenazi Jews.
That's very common in Ashkenazi. That and ulcerative colitis.
Okay, well, speaking of ulcerative colitis.
So ulcerative colitis is also an inflammatory bowel disease. Long-lasting inflammation. You get sores, aphthous ulcers in the innermost lining of your large intestine, colon and rectum, more related to that. It's more presentation found with blood in your stools, weight loss, abdominal pain, cramping. And patients generally get more flare-ups with ulcerative colitis than Crohn's.
Okay. Multiple sclerosis?
So multiple sclerosis, once again, that's one of the unpredictable autoimmune diseases, because that affects your central nervous system. It affects your brain and your spinal cord, which then disrupts the flow of information within the brain, because you've taken away the sheath covering the nerves between the brain and the rest of the body. So you get an immune system attack, where the immune system attacks something called myelin, where that's a protective layer around the nerve fibers, and you get something called demyelination, which is the actual procedure of it. You expose the nerves, you form scar tissue, you get signal disruption, and that can present with abnormalities like fatigue, visual issues, numbness, tingling, mobility issues, trouble walking, lack of coordination, cognitive changes.
Celiac.
Celiac is one of those little understood diseases that everyone thinks they've got, but they don't really have unless it's really...
because I don't want to eat.
Everyone thinks it's an allergy. It's not an allergy, and it's not an intolerance. It's where your immune system actually attacks your small intestine when you eat gluten. So this prevents the body from actually absorbing nutrients properly. It's immune attack. You damage something in your intestines called the villi, okay? And those villi are tiny finger-like projections in the small intestine which absorb nutrients and it ends up causing major malabsorption.
That's, wow, we went through that very quickly. 061-895-1019. I want to know, do you know someone whose autoimmune illness was dismissed as either stress or exhaustion over a number of years? 061-895-1019. Max says, can you maybe speak about spondyloarthritis?
So I think they're talking about ankylosing spondylitis, which is a disease which is called HLA-B27 positive. That's the one of the ways to detect it on a blood test. That affects the back, where patients get severe back pain. In fact, I actually remember, and we're talking about a good 40 years ago, my father was diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis, and he was given a back brace and certain things, and there was no treatment for it, and 40 years later, he's absolutely fine. But some people, it can be debilitating, and they can't move their
backs
forward.
So that would have been like a flare-up,
that
really,
would have been a flare-up,
but, you know, but then managed
but
it after
a lot of people
that.
With ankylosing spondylitis do have to go into immune treatment to help them with the flare-ups and with the consequences and symptoms of this ankylosing spondylitis.
Mm. Okay, and Bianca says, Dr. Marburg and Mr. Howard Feldman, I've got hypoglycemia, and when I occasionally eat something that has cane sugar in, I can be guaranteed that I put on weight. Bianca, I know you want to. It's not hypothyroidism.
Sugar,
hypoglycemia. Okay, fine. Well, I tried to get you a diagnosis there, Bianca, but he wasn't going for that. Let's talk about the invisible illness problem, because this is I think is one of the major areas of concern, that autoimmune diseases often begin with such vague symptoms. And then, fatigue is a major feature. Can we try and understand why it seems to follow this trajectory?
So it's a very typical way, because as you said, they start very slowly. And you get a buildup of inflammation in the body, which is not abrupt or it's not acute. So the symptoms like extreme fatigue and fevers and weight loss, those often mimic other diseases. And they're very temporary and less serious conditions. So the early signs, like such as these muscle aches, are commonly different in many diseases. So it's very difficult to pick up why they're happening. And what happens with these autoimmune diseases is they damage certain amounts of tissues, like the joints or the organs or the nerves, but it takes a long time before it becomes severe enough to be diagnosed. So the symptoms develop slowly because frequently, as I said earlier, people actually adjust to symptoms. They get used to the fact, the expectations of their health, whereas it's treating fatigue or pain as part of an aging process or stress-related. And actually, it's a diagnostic journal with an autoimmune disease, because with these low-grade fevers, joint stiffness, skin rashes, these all play a part in your diagnosis of actually understanding the journey you're going on. And I'm saying not everyone with general pain or a fever has got an autoimmune disease.
But I think they could feel like they're losing their minds, because they have these symptoms in a flare-up, then they're fine, and then, you really can feel like you actually are losing it.
Yeah, so I mean, like, you got to take it with perspective. You know, if you are doing 4 hours of exercise a day and you wake up the next day with severe muscle pain, you know, what's related
that.
To... If you're typing on the computer with your fingers and your fingers are sore the next day, what's it related to? It's not related to arthritis. It's related to a mechanical thing. So put the symptoms in perspective.
Right, of course.
Don't ignore them, but understand them.
Unsigned, I was asked today about Addison's disease, apparently an autoimmune disease. Patient is struggling to find a specialist. What's that?
So general endocrinologist is the best person to see for Addison's disease. There's two types of disease of the adrenal glands. One is called Cushing's, where there's an overproduction, and Addison's is an underproduction of cortisol. Okay, so it's very, very common and very, very well known amongst any physician, but the endocrinologists are the ones who treat Addison's disease.
And that was Ivana. Ivana, thank you for that question. Right, let's take a look at why sufferers often look perfectly healthy.
Well, I think it's back to the fact that what we just said now is that because it takes a long time for all the symptoms to manifest. So if these symptoms don't manifest quickly, the person looks okay. You know, it's a lot of the thing, a lot of the time we get these invisible symptoms. Okay, so these target organs, you get your flare-ups, and these mask normalcy.
But I just want to, because we are in the interest of time, I want to try and go through a number of things, especially about triggers. Could viruses trigger autoimmune? Are we seeing a change after COVID? You know, the what are these triggers? What are we seeing in terms of what are you seeing and what are you seeing in your practice?
So triggers are a very big thing. Yes, viruses, bacteria are the most common triggers of this. You get a condition called molecular mimicry, okay? So this happens when you get a pathogen, which is like a germ, that resembles a part of your body. Your immune system then comes, it attacks that infection, and then it accidentally continues attacking your own system. And we brought up before Epstein-Barr virus, which is linked to lupus and MS, multiple sclerosis, or something like a strep throat can trigger something like rheumatic fever. And once again, gut health, smoking, nutrition, all these things play a part. Even certain medications and some blood pressure medications and antibiotics can cause drug-induced versions of autoimmune conditions. Sex hormones, women make up 80% of autoimmune cases. Why? Because there's a suggestion of estrogen and the two X chromosomes which play a role in this disparity. Genetics, weight, you know, these are the triggers that we've got to look out for.
It is 6:50. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Meiberg. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be back to talk about treatment, living and living with autoimmune just after this.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Unfortunately, we are in the last lap of the weekly checkup for this week. I can't get over how quickly it has gone, and so much more. I still want to talk about treatment and living with autoimmune disease. Firstly, can it be cured?
So they cannot be cured. They can be managed to achieve long-term remission. Like we get treatments like immunosuppressants and biologic, which help control your symptoms and prevent organ damage. But many patients live chronic, normal lives, active lives, and there's new research into something called CAR T-cell therapy, which is offering new hope for future cases. There's no absolute cure. The treatment options can include anti-inflammatory medications like corticosteroids, immunosuppressants, and advanced biologics.
I was going to ask about
them.
Do they work, immunosuppressant drugs?
They do work. Normally, people are started, like someone in a flare-up of lupus, they start up on a treatment of corticosteroids. They then move on to things like methotrexate or azathioprine. They then move on to biologics, like well-known ones like Humira. These are very known treatments that help dramatically.
Not saying much, but I heard Humira is very expensive.
Yes.
How important is sleep and stress management?
Wow. So sleep is the most underrated thing in any of medical history at the moment. Okay? Underrated, because if you don't get enough sleep...
Are we really going to have to do a whole show on sleep?
I think so.
I don't want to.
I think sleep and stress management are so clinically important. They go hand in hand. Okay? They actually are the foundational components of autoimmune disease and management, okay?
So if I don't have autoimmune disease, I don't need to sleep.
That's exactly what I was saying, Howard. I'm so glad you took that away from that. That makes perfect sense. I think you actually fell asleep during that conversation. That's why you came up with
because
that
quote. Because I don't sleep.
So sleep isn't just rest. It's an active restoration period where your body regulates inflammation. That's why it's so important and repairs tissue. So during your immune regulation and flares, if you get a deep restorative sleep, your body will regulate your pro-inflammatory cytokines. Those are the proteins that trigger the inflammation. If you don't get enough sleep, it breaks this rhythm, and you get increased inflammation, and you get more autoimmune flares. And it's a vicious cycle, because chronic pain, fatigue, and inflammation, those make it more difficult to sleep. So you then get sleep deprivation, which lowers your pain threshold, and you don't know where to go. So, I mean, you know, studies say that sleep deprivation does contribute to development of autoimmune disease itself, okay? And poor sleep can blunt your body's ability to respond to even medications that you're using. for the management of this disease, as well as stress management, which goes with sleeping. You know, you've got what we call fight or flight immunity. Mm. So chronic stress activates your sympathetic nervous system, as well as something called your hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. So that leads to high levels of, say it after me,
cortisol.
Well done, Howard.
I've learned something.
While
over
short-term
years.
Short-term stress is actually more manageable, but chronic high stress causes a resistance to this cortisol, and you get uncontrolled inflammation.
Can untreated autoimmune disease become life-threatening?
So the truth is yes.
I want to ask you another question.
The truth is yes. There's no doubt about it, because if you don't treat it, it becomes life-threatening, because it involves your heart, it can involve your lungs, it can involve your joints, it can involve your central nervous system. So if you don't treat it, then you are going to develop major problems going down the line. And that's why try and catch the disease early, but don't be overly sort of, you know, excitable that every symptom you've got is related to autoimmune disease.
Anton, if someone is listening tonight and they feel constantly exhausted, maybe inflamed, foggy, or simply feels, knows something isn't right, when should they stop dismissing this as stress and start investigating it properly?
So I think it's natural for people to feel foggy and tired and stressed for a week or two. If this continues for a longer period of time, if there's associated weight loss, if there's associated fever, joint pain, and it's not something that's psychosomatic, in other words, you're not just, you know, bringing it on because you're depressed, which is also a very difficult thing to ascertain, then you need to take it further. You need to go to your doctor and say, this is what I'm feeling. You know, do I take this seriously? Do we need to do blood tests? Do we need to do other examinations? Can you help me with what I'm going through? And any reasonable doctor will go down each pathway, whether it's related to cognitive, whether it's related to depression, whether it's related to hematological reasons, whether it's related to organ reasons. There are many reasons for every single disease process, and every type of anxious feeling you're having, there's got to be an answer. Not every disease is anxiety related. Your own stress doesn't have
you
to
actually
be anxious.
Need, it's a crazy thing, but you actually need to have the confidence in your own body and conviction to say, you know what, it isn't right. I don't feel that this is right.
Have
I'm
it checked
not,
out.
I'm not mad. No. I need to have this checked out.
Have it checked out.
It's quite
and then
difficult
either
for
you
people.
Can, your mind can be set at ease, or you can find out what is going on and then hopefully treat it and get on the right path.
Dr. Anton Marburg, thank you as always. Autoimmune disease reminds us of just how complicated and maybe even fragile the human body is. Sometimes the threat doesn't come from outside. It's the battle that is happening within the body itself. And for millions of people, finally getting a diagnosis can begin be the beginning of not just treatment, but of the relief that they were looking for all along. This has been your weekly checkup with me, Howard Feldman, and Dr. Anton Myberg. We've been speaking about autoimmune diseases. Join us next week, Tuesday evening, 6 to 7 p.m., for the next episode of the weekly checkup.